Your first eight guys maybe should be blue plate specials, but those back five guys, they should be more like tin hats, more guys that are grunt players, garbage players that dive for the ball.
You are listening to the Scrambled Eggs Podcast on CrackSidewalks.com.
Welcome into Scrambled Eggs, everyone. It is time for an off-season check-in here with your unofficial Marquette basketball podcast on CrackSidewalks.com. Phil, how's the off-season going?
It finally decided to get spring / summery in Wisconsin, so it's been good, and we potted right before all the big news and decided to take 3 weeks off, so great, I guess.
Yeah, we're trying to space it out here. Joe McCann and Phil Bush with you once again, if that wasn't clear enough. So we've had enough news in the Marquette offseason that we decided another podcast was warranted. We're going to talk about some of the transfers that are coming into the program, who Marquette may be bringing into the program for 2019 and beyond, look at a few of the names that have been thrown out there in the recruiting world. We're going to talk about the schedule, which is shaping up to be a very good one, and possibly maybe talk about what could be the end for one of Marquette's all-time best. What thing we're not going to talk about in today's show is Infinity War, so if you're tuning in for that, I'm sorry. Phil's still trying to get out there and see the movie.
Don't put this on me. I feel guilty enough as it is that I haven't seen it. Don't at me. It's not my fault.
Stupid, you know, adulthood getting in the way, you know, what with work and families and, you know, responsibilities and things.
Yeah, listen, I had to be in a Cleveland bar during the opening round of the NFL draft. I'm lucky I made it out alive.
Yeah, did they not take too well with the Baker Mayfield pick?
It was not well received, but I don't know that's why people tuned in for our hot Cleveland Browns takes.
Well, do you want to talk about the NFL draft for another half hour, or do you just want to get into some of the great transfers Marquette has?
Let's go with the transfers.
Let's do that. Well, you know, if you had asked Steve Wojciechowski, you know, on the first week of April, what would an ideal spring transfer season look like for Marquette, I would say pretty much exactly what happened would have been exactly what Wojo would have wanted. Bringing in a grad transfer who can play right away at point guard, who can add some defense, and also adding a point guard who would sit out a year and then have some eligibility left for a year or two following that, and that's exactly what he got. He got Joseph Chartouni, who's coming in from Fordham, who has a great reputation as a defender, and then Kobe McEwen, who is from Toronto. He played at Utah State. He's going to sit one and play two. I'm not going to lie to you. I'm not going to act like I've watched a ton of either one of these guys. I've just seen a few highlight clips and maybe check their stats on KenPom. What about you, Phil? What is your reaction to the two newest Golden Eagles?
Well, I guess my initial reaction is we may not win the regular season or the postseason, but we're definitely winning the offseason. Like you said, it was pretty much the perfect campaign for what Wojo needed to do. I think what's really interesting about the Chartouni signing is, like you said, he is a point guard primarily. He's got length, so we're not going to play, you know, double midgets. You know, he's 6'3", but what was interesting from a statistical analysis, I was seeing some chatter. I'm not sure if it was Paint Touches or Anonymous Eagle, but it was definitely one of the two talking about that, you know, so Chartouni played for Fordham, you know, in a lower tier league, if you will, but still racked up some impressive defensive stats. But if you look at it, his assists and his steals on a tempo free basis, his team was not very good defensively, and they weren't very good offensively, and yet he was still racking up, you know, top 50 type stats in both steals and assists. So, you know, it indicates that this isn't a case where, you know, he's playing lower level competition or has a great team around him that makes him look better. I think it kind of sticks out that he is a talented player that needed to play up a level, and Wojo needed to get him, and he got him.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, we probably wouldn't know otherwise, but I'm pretty sure Chartouni was Marquette's top target just because he wasn't the best player out there, but he was the best fit for what Marquette needed. Like you said, a defensive a defensive point guard who can also create for others. You know, you mentioned his steals. If you're looking at KenPom, his steal percentage, so number of possessions he plays that result in him getting a steal, was at 5.6, which ranked number 2 in the nation, which is outstanding. Paint Touch has had the stat on this. I've lost it now, but it was something to the effect of, in the KenPom era, like a steal percentage above 5 is pretty rare. It's not something you get from a lot of guys in any given year. Like I said, he was number 2 in the nation at 5.6. So the number of steals he got the last year and even the year before that are really exceptional. Now, I think Fordham plays a bit of an up-tempo style on defense. They like play kind of like a Havoc-type defense at times. They like to press a lot. So maybe some of those steals are kind of a bit of a result of chaos and just picking up on other teams' mistakes. But the fact is, he does have a reputation as a pretty good on-the-ball defender, jumping into passing lanes and creating steals. So that's what Marquette needs. It's just a guy who can really hold his own against bigger point guards. He's not going to get overwhelmed out there and hopefully really know where he's supposed to be defensively and whatever defensive scheme Marquette's going to be working in next year, that he's going to fit into it. And also, you know, give enough on the offensive end that you're not losing too much there. Now, obviously, he's not anywhere near the shooter Andrew Rousey was. His three-point percentage is actually kind of bad. It's 28.4%, so that's not a guy you want taking a lot of threes, but you don't need him to take threes on the team he's going to be playing on next year. You need him to kick it out to Marcus Howard, Sam Hauser, Joey Hauser, you know, whoever else is out there, you know, Jamal Cain, whoever else is going to be Marquette's three-point shooters next year. So he doesn't need to do a ton offensively other than create. What he really needs to do is just continue to bring that defensive intensity. And if he was able to, you know, put up another steal percentage above 5 next year, then that would be pretty much perfect for what Wojo was asking.
Yeah, I think you're right that, like, I think if he can slash and create assists and then just lock down, you know, I don't, whether it's the best guard or whoever it is on the other team, I think that makes everybody else around him better. I you know, Marcus and Sam and Jamal and some of the others are going to have to kind of step up their three-point shooting. You know, you're going to take Rousey off this team, so I think that as a whole, the three-point shooting of the team is going to go down next year compared to this year. But generally, maybe that means the offense will be a little bit more balanced than it was this past year. And one of the things that's going to be interesting, and everyone should be prepared for the angst come next season, is simply that, you know, with McEwen sitting, you know, next year, that leaves 12 roster spots, but there are 12 very talented players on the roster. And so Wojo's biggest problem next year may be, how does he keep everyone happy? How does he distribute the minutes on the roster? Because I think he's got some clear-cut starters, but it's going to be a question of who's getting minutes and how does he distribute the minutes that are available, right?
Yeah, hopefully that works itself out, and some guys who are maybe lower on the depth chart will be receptive to maybe fewer minutes. I can't say there's anybody who would be a redshirt candidate, you know, because a lot of these guys have redshirted already, either by transferring in or, you know, sitting out a year. I think the only guy who maybe even could redshirt would be Brennan Bailey, and he's hasn't played basketball in 2 years, so I don't know if he wanted to go a third year without playing basketball. But yeah, like, it'll be – but still, that being said, I don't expect much playing time-wise next year from Brennan Bailey or Ike Eke.
Correct.
But still, even if you take those two guys out of the equation, is just, like, spot minutes, that's still 10 guys who are expecting to see the floor and see the floor quite a bit. And yeah, but hopefully if you got everybody can buy into a team concept, then maybe that won't be as big of a deal. And I guess it's a good problem to have. It's better than the alternative of only having 6 guys and wondering how you're going to get to the end of a game without everybody being totally exhausted.
Right. So, well, and maybe it saves some wear and tear on, like, Sam Hauser, right? Like, I don't think anyone plays more than 30 minutes a game next season, probably.
Yeah, well, maybe Marcus Howard would, but we'll see how it goes, because the game is, it's good to have depth, and right, you don't have to maybe necessarily have your best players play every minute of every game, because there's enough depth there that you can get guys adequate rest in game, so you can get the most out of them in the closing minutes. We'll see what the closing time lineup ends up looking like for Marquette next year. But, you know, when you add Shartouni, yeah, you referenced, Phil, that maybe the shooting won't be quite as good as it was last year. Marquette was third in the country in three-point percentage last year, which is terrific. So, and the offensive efficiency was 12th in the country. But so even if that offensive efficiency like it drops down into the 20s, that's still fine as long as that defensive number isn't in the 180s
right.
like it was last year. Now the question is, how big of a jump can one guy make? Now maybe it's more than one guy because you know Chartouni's coming in, but you're also adding Ed Morrow to the rotation. We'll see if Joey Hauser adds anything defensively, but you know realistically, how much can we expect that number to jump from being 182 last year to how high can it get? And how high does it need to get for us to maybe feel comfortable about where the team can be defensively next year?
Well, I think if the offense stays top 20, I think that if the defense can jump into a top 100 rating, you know, preferably top 75, I think that's more than enough. I do think, you know, with the combination of the players that are there either getting older or getting healthier or both, right? Like Sam Hauser clearly was injured all season, and so his defensive capabilities were not as prevalent as you might otherwise think. As an example, you know, another year of Greg Elliott and Jamal Cain with experience. You mentioned Ed Morrow bringing in Chartouni. Getting older, getting stronger, and getting a few extra players, I think that makes enough to jump you to the top 100. If not, I really – it's got to be coaching, right, at that point?
Yeah. Maybe so. Like, I mean, if the number stays about the same as it was, then I would say then you would chalk it up to coaching. But, you know, maybe a couple players can make a big difference. Here are some I wrote down some of the numbers in offensive efficiency and defensive efficiency under Wojo and how they've progressed. I know this is – since I'm saying it on a podcast, you can't exactly see it. Maybe we'll include this in the post, but So the first year, let's talk strictly offense. The first 2 years under Wojo, the offense was ranked 154 and 116 in the country. But then you bring in Rousey and Howard and Hauser, it jumped from 116 to 8. So a jump of over 100 in offense from year 2 to year 3 in Wojo. Then it was 12 last year, but about the same number. The statistical number was 120.8 in 2017, 119.4. last year. So essentially the same. I mean, very small difference. So that's, but the jump between year two and year three on the offensive rating was significant because you added two or three really good offensive players. Now, on the flip side, the defense under Wojo started out at 69, which I guess was nice, and then you go to 88, and then a big drop the year after that in 2017 to 165. Again, that probably coincides with some of the guys Wojo was bringing in. He brought in guys who were offensive-minded, not necessarily defensive-minded, jumped from 88 to 165. So a huge drop in defensive efficiency between year two and three, and it was about the same last year from 165 down to 186, though the number was about the same. The defensive rating was 104.2. It went up to 106. So like a small drop. But, you know, ranking-wise, jumped about 20 spots. But I guess you notice those big drops in offense and defense between, or, you know, the offense took a big drop up, the defense took a big drop down between year two and three. That's largely due to personnel.
Right.
That coincided with the arrivals of Rousey, Howard, and Hauser playing those years. So now will Chartouni, Morrow, whatever you're getting from Mike Ekpe, and then maybe, and you know, Joey Hauser, does that really move the needle on defense? I don't know if it's going to move it 100 points, but who knows? Maybe it does move it a significant amount. Personnel can make a difference, significant difference, especially when you're talking about more than one player. And I think when you're looking at Chartouni and Morrow, hopefully that's going to be a big enough contribution defensively to really move that number far away from 186. Yeah, the offense may take a step back, but I think you can live with that if the defense can get, you know, closer to 100 than it, you know, close than it is now to 200.
Yeah, I got to hope it's a personnel thing. I mean, I think we were pretty clear repeatedly this past season with playing Rousey and Howard together was a defensive disaster. So by default, that won't be an option. Chartouni gives you, you know, more length and obviously defensive prowess. So I got to think.
Plus, play more minutes for Elliott too.
Right, right, exactly. And you know, Sam Hauser is going to play probably more the three than he is the four. So the you know, there's all sorts of people that move around that makes things. And let's be honest, I don't think Wojo's going to do anything dramatically different. I don't think he's going to go in there and say, all right, scrap it all. We're playing 1-3-1 exclusively, or we're playing a box-and-one the whole season, right?
He's yeah, gonna... I mean, I expect to see, like, similar progressions as we've seen the last few years. It's like, all right, we're going to do man-to-man now. Okay, man-to-man not working. Okay, we'll finally try his own.
Right.
But hopefully the man-to-man works out better. Because, you know, that's what Wojo wants to play, is aggressive kind of in-your-face man-to-man defense until it doesn't work, and then maybe he'll die a little inside and play zone if that's what he has to do.
Right. Well, and even if he ends up having to play zone, again, like, the team's longer overall than it was, so that's going to naturally help, right? Like, I mean, there are some lineups where you might play something, you know, you could play something like Chartuni, Elliott, Kane, Hauser, and I don't know, Murrow or Helt or something like that, and be significantly longer than we were all season, or, you know, or Sakar and in there somewhere as well. So there's options on the defensive end. What will be interesting to me is, and I don't think it's going to happen, but there's definitely, we got to see how they play, but there's definitely on paper the looks of, hey, we could, if we need to get stops, there's defensive lineups we can put out there to get stops that might maybe sacrifice the offense a little bit. It'll be interesting to see if Wojo ever goes that route. I think his mentality is just to always be attacking and going with offense versus defense, which is weird given his playing career. But yeah, it'd be interesting to see if we see any defensive lineups.
I don't think Wojo would go with a defensive lineup for like extended minutes,
right?
You know, like for, you know, with like 5 minutes to go in the game, but you know, like say it's 20 seconds left and the team, you know, your opponent only needs one shot to win it. Yeah, would he throw out a lineup of, you know, without Howard out there? Would, like, throw a lineup hypothetically of Chartuni, Greg Elliott, Sakar, Jamal Kane, and, you know, Matt Helt, or, you know, Theo John, whoever the best defensive big man is, something like that. Like, you wouldn't have any Hausers or wouldn't have Howard out there, which, you know, he would never do that, I think, for extended minutes. But, yeah, like, for a specialty lineup, would he do something like that? Who knows? Maybe we'll see.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see. But again, to your point, it's personnel help. There's no doubt, but I don't know that we can count on personnel all the way, because I mean, again, part of the positive of this team for next season is 70% of the roster is the same, or 80% of the roster is the same as it was last year, or this past season. So how much better are you going to get where the roster didn't turn over all that much?
Yeah.
I mean, because you talked about the drops, or the improvement in offense and the unimprovement in defense, right? But that was also with major roster turnover, right? Like the roster was was half the roster was replaced in those years you were talking about.
Yep, that's true. Yeah. You know, Marquette is bringing back a lot of familiar faces, so, and I think a lot of people are counting on experience to make a difference, because, you know, what was the phrase we got sick of hearing over the last year, two, three? We're a young team, right? You know, we're a young team. And it was true, but that excuse goes away, and hopefully with that excuse of a young team going away, that there will be improvements and consistency on both ends of the floor, and hopefully that shows up in the stat sheets and, of course, in the wins and losses. We didn't talk about him much because he's not going to play next year, but I did want to touch briefly on Kobe McEwen, Phil. Again, much like Chartuni, I can't say I've actually watched a ton of him. You know, highlight video here and there. What I do know, he is a bigger point guard, 6'4", 200, so nice size.
Yep.
For a point guard, and led his team in rebounds last year, which is interesting for a point guard. Third team All-Mountain West. He was a freshman of the year 2 years ago. And a scoring point guard, apparently. 15.6 points a game. So he's the guy who's going to step in and you would presume be the starting point guard next to, you would assume, a senior Marcus Howard in 2019-2020. So that's an interesting piece to have that guy who's in the program and will be familiar with everything, you know, that Wojo likes to do offensively and defensively, so he'll be ready to go and take over for Chartouni after this year.
Yeah, well, and I mean, what it basically boils down to is the continuity that both he and Chartouni provide, right? Point guard was probably the most glaring weakness on this roster going into next season. We experienced the Marcus Howard as a point guard experiment this past season, and I guess I'll be generous and say there were mixed results. So I think bringing McEwen in with Chartouni being essentially a 1 year rental, if you will.
Chartouni is 1 year, right?
Yeah,
good.
Yeah, no, and so McEwen, having him on the bench and kind of learning and experiencing it, so he should be ready to go next year. He'll have playing experience from his Utah State days, plus he'll have built up rapport with Marcus Howard. So I think that, you know, it just goes a long way to keeping the roster consistent and keeping the, you know, kind of the path forward, you know, kind of without it being a roller coaster, right? Because you're probably not, if he had waited to bring somebody in starting next season, either as a 1 year transfer or as a freshman, you're not going to have that kind of chemistry, right? And I think really this coming season and the 2019 season are for sure the two big shots Wojo has to do damage in the Big East and the NCAA tournament. I mean, the roster is going to be more talented than it ever has been.
Right. See, that's the thing that it really saves Wojo from, because, you know, as excited as people are about the team this coming year, Marquette is essentially returning the exact same team the following year. I mean, as much as we all love Matt Helt, I mean, he's the only guy you graduate after this year, along with Chartouni. So every other key player is projected to be back. I know that's assuming a lot for next year, but let's say everyone fills out their all of their eligibility at Marquette. You bring back everyone else, but you wouldn't want to have to bring in a freshman point guard to lead that team, or have to hope and pray that there's a grad transfer available to replace Joseph Chartouni. So now you know who the point guard is going to be in 1920. You know it's going to be Kobe McEwen. So now you can recruit point guards out of luxury as a guy to be a backup, the guy who takes over after McEwen, or the guy who backs up McEwen.
Right. And from roster balance standpoint, it also works out pretty well, right? So you're bringing in two, three, maybe at most four-person recruiting classes instead of recruiting entire starting lineups at one shot.
Yeah, so I think that's the big bonus to McEwen, is just the continuity. And again, I know it's assuming a lot to look 2 years ahead in college basketball because a lot of stuff changes, but that 19-20 team looks to be experienced and talented, and who knows, could be a special team, but we still need to learn about a lot of these guys first, and that's what 18-19 is going to be all about. Before we move on to the schedule, Phil, I guess since we're on the topic of recruiting, you know, Wojo and his staff appear to be done recruiting for next year because obviously they're out of scholarships, and I think anybody who was going to leave the program would have done it by now. So they are looking at, you know, 2019, and they have two spots available as it stands. Again, Matt Helt will graduate, and then Joseph Chartouni will use up his grad transfer year. And to me, the way I look at recruiting for Marquette for next year, Phil, for the 2019 class, I still think you need to bring in a point guard because you need to bring in that next one after McEwen, and, you know, and another, you know, guy who can score in the backcourt, a guy who's going to maybe replace some minutes for Marcus Howard after he graduates. And, you know, just another, you just need more guards because Marquette is just so loaded on forwards right now. And then I think they can use that other available scholarship for really any other spot, maybe call it best player available, you know, whoever the best guy out there they can get. I'll just throw out a few names that Marquette has been connected with. You know, if you're a recruiting guru, you can follow some of these on Twitter and, you know, 24/7 arrivals, whatever your recruiting site of choice is. But it looks like at the point guard spot, the names that you're hearing a lot are DJ Carton, who's a point guard from Bettendorf, Iowa, James Bishop, who goes to Mount St. Joseph in Baltimore, Maryland. They visited with Mario McKinney, who's from St. Louis. Rocket Watts is a name you probably will hear a lot. He plays for that, I believe, the same AAU team that A lot of Marquette's current players played for Greg Elliott, Jamal Cain, and Ike Eke, I think all played for them. The Family, I think, is the name of it, out of Detroit. So that's a name that I would say Marquette is in pretty good position with to add as a guard. And another interesting name to watch is a kid named Nico Mannion. Now, he's in the 2020 class right now, but he's already talking about reclassifying. That's kind of the thing that's becoming more and more popular is kids reclassifying, you know, trying to get out of high school earlier. But he's a kid who is very highly rated in 2020. He's a five-star guy, top 25 guy. But Marquette is apparently in pretty good shape with him. He's, like, listed them as, like, one of the top three or five schools who's working the hardest for him right now. So if they can get a visit out of him and get him to A, commit, and B, reclassify, that would be very similar to the Marcus Howard situation where you kind of get him before a lot of other bigger schools get in on him and can offer him and get him on campus. So Nico Mannion, a kid in 2020, is a name to watch for the point guard spot. Phil, what do you have any, like, I don't know how into the recruiting thing you are right now, but any names that jump out to you, or maybe another way of putting it, any needs or any way that you would like to see Marquette go as they look at 2019?
Well, I think I wouldn't call out any names specifically, but I think what's interesting is the strategy of what you do with the recruiting in 2019, right? You've got two roster spots, and presumably, you know, you never stop recruiting and you never assume people are going to stick around. Who knows? But presumably, if everyone's back 2019, I mean, you've got a senior Sam Hauser, senior Marcus Howard. You're going to have McEwen starting. You're going to have Sakar. You know, you're going to have a ton of depth and a ton of experience on the roster. You're not right. really going to be recruiting for immediate need in 2019, right? So you're really taking those at a minimum two scholarships, and you're basically looking to get talented players in that can be ready to play in 2020. I wouldn't go so far as to say that they're redshirt candidates, right? Because you're gonna, you know, if they've got plenty of talent, you're gonna bring them in, even if they have more talent than a senior on the roster, right?
Right.
But you don't have to take players that are ready to go in 2019. You can take somebody that's maybe either a late bloomer or somebody that's comfortable waiting till 2020 to kind of really take off. So I do think point guard is definitely one of the things, and I think you're going to have to continue to get you're going to have to get a big man out of that. So if you can get a big man and a point guard out of your 2020 recruiting class, I think you're in pretty solid position for that 2020 season, which is, you know, seems weird to be looking out that far, but I mean, this is really, if this roster is what we think it is in terms of talent and experience, by 2020 you're looking, Wojo's looking to reload, not rebuild, right?
Yeah, I think that is a fair way to say it, because again, like you said, assuming everyone is back, like, even, you know, whatever freshman you bring in, unless you just land a grand slam five-star prospect, they're probably not going to play a ton as freshmen,
right?
At least, you know, they wouldn't project to, but, you know, who knows, maybe they come in and surprise people and take minutes away from a outgoing senior, but, you know, we'll see how it goes. But, you know, you mentioned what to get besides a point guard. I haven't seen Marquette connected to too many bigs, but there are quite a few wing players that are out there. You know, one that's really interesting to me, just because I've seen him play a couple times, is Jalen Wilson, who's he's a forward at Denton Guyer High School here in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. He listed Marquette as one of the teams that's working hard for him. Sounds like he may even take a visit, which would be interesting. Yeah, he's a guy who he may be able to play a little bit as a freshman, but he would definitely be a guy who would benefit a lot. You know, who Marquette would benefit from having a lot starting in like 2020, 21, when, you know, guys like Sam Hauser and Sakar Anum have exhausted their eligibility. There's another guy in Dallas-Fort Worth, Samuel Williamson, a similar player, a little longer, but also a shooter who would be an interesting fit. They've been connected with him. EJ Liddell is a forward in Belleville, Illinois. I think he was the Gatorade Gatorade Player of the Year in Illinois last year as a junior. He's a guy to watch out for. Noble Days is the one kid in Wisconsin that's interesting. You know, he's a power forward. Maybe Marquette's depth at power forward may be cooling him a little bit. But I'm sure he's a guy Wojo would love to have. Any, you know, like you said, like a guy like Noble Days probably wouldn't play a ton as a freshman. So if he's looking for immediate minutes, maybe Marquette isn't the best fit for him. But, you know, as some guys start to graduate and move on from Marquette, it's like as, you know, Matt Helt graduates and then Ed Morrow graduates, then Sam Hauser, then, yeah, there will probably be more minutes available for Noble Days starting in, like, 2020. But, you know, it's always good to land the best kid in the state. Just, you know, because you know your rivals are going to get him, because if he doesn't end up at Marquette, he might end up at Wisconsin, so that's a name to watch. There's a few other guys Marquette has been connected to. I guess I don't need to go down a laundry list for you, but yeah, I mean, Marquette definitely has a lot of irons in the fire for 2019, and who knows how many guys they end up signing, but I would definitely love to see them get one of those point guards. I think Nico Mannion is very interesting to me, just because he's a guy who's played with USA Basketball, and his situation is, like I said, similar to Marcus Howard in that I think Marquette's trying to get him on campus a year early. So keep an eye on him. But I think Rocket Watts is the guy they're really close on, and I think they might get a visit from him. But there are a number of guys out there, so we'll see over the next few months how many, you know, which guys decide they want to put Marquette in their top 10, top 5, and get on campus for an official visit. But, there's one thing, you know, Wojo has done pretty well in recruiting, whether it's, you know, getting some higher profile guys like Howard or getting guys in state like Hauser, both Hausers.
Yeah.
And then, you know, he's done well in Michigan. He's done well in the surrounding states. He's done well in Michigan. He's done well in Minnesota. And so we'll see if he's able to. And then, of course, Stan Johnson has certainly helped in that regard, going out, especially getting on some guys on the West Coast, most notably Marcus Howard. And we'll see if he's able to make any headway on Nico Mannion as well. So those are just some of the names to kind of look out for as you move towards 2019-2020 recruiting.
Yeah, well, and one other note in, I guess we'll call it recruiting oddities, but Marquette is even recruiting in 2021. They did make an offer, it appears, to Patrick Baldwin Jr., who is out of the place for Sussex Hamilton, out of the Milwaukee area. But that name may or may not sound familiar because he is the son of college up the road from Marquette, UW-Milwaukee, Pat Baldwin, head coach of the UWM Panthers. So just an interesting recruiting oddity, if you will.
Well, if Pat can't get his son to play for him, I mean, dang.
Well, considering they had half their roster leave, you know, like 3 weeks ago, I don't know if Pat's going to be, you know, in charge of that program come 2021.
Yeah. Yeah, he's just taking it over, though. We'll see how he does. But that would be awkward, though, wouldn't it? You know, just like, hey, Dad, good news. I'm staying in Milwaukee for college. Bad news. I'm going to Marquette.
So does his son at Thanksgiving, if Patrick Jr. comes to Marquette, does he just start chanting 36-0 at him over turkey dinner?
Go to your room, son.
We'd have to play them then, right?
I'd hate it.
But I never want to play UWM again.
Hey, you know, like, not that I'm necessarily wishing this on the guy, but if Pat Baldwin doesn't work out at UWM, and you know, maybe down the road there's a assistant coach opening, maybe you do that thing. It seems what everybody else does. You just hire a kid's dad to get him on staff.
It's better than dropping bags.
Yeah, yeah. It's the legal way of dropping bags. It's what Missouri did to get the Porters, and it's what SMU tried to do to get Tyrese Maxey. He's a guy Marquette had offered, but apparently he's going to be going to Kentucky or Texas. He's going to announce that this week. But, yeah, that was the funny thing with Maxey is, you know, they hired his dad at SMU. And then I think over the last few months, like, Maxey has got some serious offers, like Kentucky and Texas and North Carolina and Michigan State. And I think he went to his dad. He's like, Dad, do I really have to go to SMU? And he probably's like, no, son, you don't have to. And then they told the SMU staff that. And then, well, now his dad's no longer on the SMU staff. So how about that?
Yeah, that's weird. I mean, could you get any more blatant? But
it's like, why did we hire you?
What are you doing here if you're not going to give us?
What would you say you do here?
Exactly. So, yeah, all sorts of.
All right, so that's enough recruiting talk, I guess. But, that's something we'll kind of loosely track over the summer. I don't know if we'll, you know, if Marquette gets a commitment at some point, we may fire up the emergency podcast signal, but yeah, we'll see how that goes. But the other interesting news over the last few weeks, Phil, has been some more scheduling notes from Marquette. Most recently, a home-and-home with Kansas State, which is really interesting to me, especially for this coming year for 18-19. Kansas State looks loaded for next year because they're bringing back essentially everyone from an Elite Eight team. Now, Kansas is still probably going to win the Big 12, barring some major FBI intervention. Kansas looks like a national championship contender for next year. But Kansas State may be their biggest challenger in the Big 12, just because of all the experience and the good players they're bringing back. And so to get them in Milwaukee next year, I think is significant. And the schedule is looking pretty challenging for Marquette this coming year. What do you say?
Well, I think the schedule looks like Wojo and the athletic department and the staff think they're going to be good, right? I mean, this schedule is set up so that there are it lends itself. So assuming the team's as good as we think it is, there is no reason to leave them out because of a soft non-conference schedule, right? It's going
to
be
exactly. You just don't want to do that to yourself, where you know you only leave yourself with one or two games in the non-conference that you absolutely have to win to show the committee anything. So now there's plenty of room for error. Say you lose two or three, maybe even four games in the non-conference schedule, you could still say, hey, well, at least we played somebody. And the thing is, if you get a few of those wins, then you should be in great shape when it comes once you get into Big East play, which is always going to be outstanding. To run down what we know from the Marquette schedule so far, we know they're going to open up the new arena, which, by the way, we should be hearing a name on that any day now. Like the sponsorship, anyway.
It's been rumbling around for months now, but it hasn't been announced, and I keep hearing it, but then it gets pushed back a week, so who knows?
Yeah, it's like last-second bids, more bags being dropped, I guess. But anyway, the new arena is going to open up with UMBC, they of the 16-1 upset over Virginia. So a good team, a name team, I think is something that will, you know, even though it's a game you should win, not granted Virginia should have beaten them too, but so I guess you wouldn't take anything for granted, but that's a game you should win. But it's like, it's a bye game that everyone's going to recognize. Like, oh, that's UMBC. They're the guys who beat Virginia. That's a pretty cool game to open up with. So you open up with them. That'll be fun. I hope they bring their social media guy.
For sure. Then
we have the NIT tip-off, where you will get two of the following three: Kansas, Tennessee, or Chris Mack's Louisville Cardinals. So you're going to get two very good opponents. You're getting, again, Kansas, a team who I think is going to be preseason top five, Tennessee, who was the co-SEC champ last year and is on the way up under Rick Barnes, and then Louisville, who is moving into a new era with Chris Mack, a guy who I really like and respect. I kind of hate that he's at Louisville now, but that's his problem. That's Xavier's problem, I guess, not mine so much. But I still do like Chris Mack a lot. I don't know if I wish him well with Louisville, though, because it's still Louisville. But still, that's a game. I would love to play Kansas and Louisville in that, though, in some order.
Yeah, we'll call it the FBI tournament.
Exactly. Thanks, Adidas. And then so after that, we know Marquette's going to get Wisconsin at home. That one's for sure. They get Buffalo at home. Now, that's a good bye game. That's similar to
Vermont.
Let's see, what was it? Vermont this past year, and was it escaping me? Or was it San Diego State?
Belmont.
Year
no, Bel.
Oh yeah, well, yeah, Belmont 2 years ago, and then it was the year before that. It was Fresno State. That's who it was.
Yes.
So
yeah.
Marquette likes to play a top 100, like a top 100 bye game in the middle of December. So that looks like that's what's going to be. Buffalo is going to be this year, and then we know we have Kansas State at home, and then it hasn't been confirmed, but in all likelihood, there will be a Gavitt game on the road, so that's a Big Ten team. I have no idea who it could be. It could be Michigan State. It could be Rutgers. But probably that's probably going to be the only true road game Marquette plays. Because basically, based on what we have now, Phil, I can't really see Marquette adding another name opponent, like a top 50 KenPom team, like especially on the road, based on what they already have, because I think the schedule's challenging enough if there is a Gavitt game road contest in there.
Yeah, well, I think what's very interesting about the way the schedule seems is that I think they've kind of thread a very, very particular needle successfully in terms of, so you've got a brand new arena, so you want to maximize your games in the arena, right? So you can bring as many people in, maximize your revenue you're getting off of this, you know, essentially first year of excitement. Bring in quality and or name opponents for those games. Again, maximizing revenue plus maximizing kind of your potential as a team, you know, if you're as talented as you think you are, maximizing your ability ability to get good quality wins that'll will help you out, especially because the Big East looks like it may take a step back next year with all the talent that left after this season. Plus you are getting some you're going to get credits, right? So the NIT preseason NIT will give you neutral game credit when it comes to the kind of the rankings and the scoring and the stats. Plus you have the Gavitt game, which any road game, even if it is against Big Ten powerhouse Rutgers, you know, you're still getting credit for a road win. So it looks good. I think with the exception of maybe two or three games, even with as difficult as the schedule may be, I think Marquette's probably even or favored in those. I you know, certainly Kansas and probably Kansas State at a minimum would favor the opposing teams as opposed to Marquette, but Marquette should.
Yeah, I mean, assuming Azubuike comes back to Kansas, and again, the FBI does not decimate Kansas's roster.
Right.
Looks like they may have to lose Silvio D'Souza. I don't know about that, but Kansas will be a big favorite over Marquette if they end up playing. But Louisville, I don't know. Tennessee, I'm not sure, because the neutral site games, those could go either way, so we'll see how those shape out. But yeah, Marquette's going to be a home favorite of Wisconsin. They'll obviously be a favorite over Buffalo. At home, they may be a favorite over Kansas State. Hard to say right now, because you don't know exactly what these teams are going to look like. And, you know, the Gavitt game, who knows? You know, like, if you're going to Michigan or Michigan State, yeah, you're going to be a big dog in that game. If you're going to Rutgers, might be a favorite, you know, on the road against Rutgers. But, you know, I'm excited to see who you play in the Big Ten, because I think there are a lot of – because the only – team we know we're not going to play in the Gavitt game is Wisconsin. You're not going to play them because you're already playing them, and they're not going to do that. So, but I think it would be awesome if, like, say, you get Michigan, right?
Right.
You may not be quite as good as they were last year, but should still be very good, upper tier of the Big Ten. Purdue will probably be. I mean, we played Purdue last year, so I don't know if they'd do a return game there.
I'd love to see like an Indiana game or something like that.
Indiana would be cool. Yeah, I mean, they just got one of the best players in the country, Romeo Langford, the top five guy, probably almost certainly a one and done. Did you see the crowd for his commitment?
Good Lord.
He's a kid. Like, the town where Romeo Langford plays in is New Albany, Indiana, which is basically Louisville, but it's on just across the state line. So it's in Indiana, so it's at Indiana High School, so he's like an Indiana High School legend, and people came from all over the state just packed in red for his announcement. I'm like, if he announces for Kansas this thing, they're going to need like a police escort to get him out of there. So you knew he was going to commit to Indiana, but yeah, that would be awesome if Marquette played Indiana next year early on, because it would be just a crazy jam-packed house. It would be one of the first two or three road games, I would guess, for Romeo Langford in Indiana. People, you know, probably wearing Romeo jerseys. Of course, they would be unauthorized because, you know, you can't do that. But still, they would be whatever. I guess he'll be wearing 22 in college. But that kid is awesome. And so I think to play Indiana next year would be pretty great for Marquette. That'd
yeah,
be pretty sweet.
That would be.
Now that you say it, that's what I'm rooting for, to be honest.
Yeah, actually, I think Indiana's probably number one. I'd love to see Michigan like as my number two choice. You know, I don't know what's going to happen with Michigan State, right? I mean, there's still some stuff lingering out there that probably
I don't know if there's going to be wholesale changes like Izzo getting fired or anything like that. Like, I don't think there's going to be anything like that. But if there was going to be something like that, I think it would have happened already. So, but who knows? Yeah, I've been surprised before. When did Thad Mata leave Ohio State last year? Was it like July?
So there
could always be late changes. So who knows? Ohio State would be cool. That would be a cool game to play.
Yeah, that would be cool. Yeah, they're bringing most everybody back again. So, yeah, I think the Big Ten, you know, any of the top four or five teams in the Big Ten, again, especially since it's a road trip, would be good for Marquette. And the other thing that's nice with these the non-conference tests, again, Marquette's going to have one of the most experienced rosters next year. So you would think that they could take advantage of that. And while some teams may be young and kind of rebuilding, maybe jump on them. You know, you might catch a Big Ten team that's kind of reloading, that in the non-conference isn't as great, but then when it comes to the conference season, really kind of takes off, and you can build off of that, right? Like beating a whatever it is, like say it's a 15 and 15-5 Big Ten team in non-conference looks a lot better, even though they maybe weren't as good when we played them. So,
right, yeah, like especially if the Big Ten ends up being like last year, where there were like five teams at the top and then a bunch of blah starting at six, and yeah, teams, yeah, if that would work out, that would help in Marquette's favor. Just get a team that really gets a nice late boost and helps Marquette's RPI as you get a little closer. So that's a look at the schedule. That's what we know now, and I guess we'll probably have a few more things trickle out over the next few months or so as the Marquette schedule all comes together. But I think I have to say the staff and, you know, the athletic department and Wojo and everybody, they've done a nice job. I think, like you said, Phil, you can tell that they are loading up thinking that the team is going to be good this year, so let's challenge ourselves and go to the selection committee say and have to say, oh, well, we didn't play anybody. So they're playing plenty of good teams, and so it is time to challenge yourself and play a good non-conference schedule. So I've got to give your hats off to them. I think they're doing a really good job scheduling.
And I think we have to be okay with, based on the schedule they have, we have to be okay with taking a couple of losses in the non-conference, right? I mean, there's no doubting. There's at least based on what we've seen, there's a half dozen teams that have the talent and the capability to beat Marquette, you know, at any point in time. Will they? Don't know. We'll see.
There's no pressure to go undefeated in the non-conference because it's not weak. Like, right. You know, you can get through with a couple losses and still say, oh, well, we still got a good resume. So that's the good news. One thing I did want to touch on before we get out of here, Phil, it's not official yet, and I don't know if it's going to be official, but there is a possibility that Dwayne Wade has played his last NBA game. And that makes me feel really old.
Yeah, super old.
But you know, I think that's, you know, for anyone who's a Marquette fan, especially if you were a Marquette fan in 2001 or before, you know, we all feel like we kind of watched Dwayne Wade grow up from a prospect who was relatively unknown when he arrived on the college campus of Marquette and was kind of lightly recruited and has emerged into a superstar. And, you know, I guess I don't want to do a total wrap on his career because he still may have another year to go. But, you know, I kind of hope he does what Kobe did and announced before the season that there's going to be one more year and kind of do a farewell tour. So we can have a year-long salute to Dwayne Wade as he retires. Who knows? He may play two or three more years, but I just don't know if he's got that much left in him. But I'd kind of be bummed if he kind of quietly retired like Tim Duncan did last year, but that was Tim Duncan's style. Tim Duncan never really said anything. He was always quiet, so that was kind of vintage Tim Duncan, just kind of quietly going away. But who knows? Wade may decide to do that, but like, what are your thoughts as you hear the possibility that Dwayne Wade may be done playing basketball?
I'd be really depressed. I mean, if you saw at least one of the playoff series against the 76ers, one of those games was like vintage Wade where he just took over. So it's clearly he's still got some of that spark there. I'd love to see at least one more year where it is kind of a goodbye farewell tour. You know, he's got plenty of other things he can do other than basketball. I have no doubt that, you know, somebody might take a look at him and bringing him into a booth somewhere or something like that. But like you said, it does make me feel old. But I want to see him play at least one more year because I feel like this season snuck up on me in terms of I wasn't even thinking until the season was over that maybe Wade wouldn't play after this year. So I think I want to, like, for nostalgia reasons, if nothing else, want to, like, watch some of his games next season and just be like, appreciate.
Yeah, just really kind of,
right?
Soak it in. And, like, you know, when, like, let's, if he does, you know, play another year, you know, when he plays one more game in Milwaukee, make a note. Let's all go out. Let's do a big farewell to Dwayne Wade. They make a big deal out of it, I'm sure.
Yeah, I want to go to that game, right? You know?
Exactly. And, but yeah, it's like, I think kind of the gut feeling is that Dwayne Wade would either do a farewell season with the Heat or retire. I just don't think at this point in his career, he's going to go chasing another ring, like, and go sign with, like, the Warriors or, you know, something for a league minimum to try to get one more ring or anything like that. Because I think Wade doesn't have anything left to prove as an NBA player.
Oh, he's like a first ballot Hall of Famer, right?
I mean, he absolutely is. You know, I was going down like some of the categories you could put him in all time, So, like, think about this. All right, first, I would have to say he's a top three shooting guard all time.
Yes.
Behind Jordan and Kobe, right? Some other guys may enter the conversation there. I certainly think there's a very strong argument to be made that he's the third best shooting guard of all time. With all respect to all the guys who played in the 1970s, I think there's little argument that he's the best NBA basketball player Marquette has ever produced.
I mean, I agree.
Like, again, Marquette's produced a lot of good players, but if we're being honest and looking at, you know, all the rings and the points scored and all-star games, Marquette has not produced anybody better than Dwayne Wade. Is there any argument to that?
No, not even a little bit. All respect.
Yeah, all due respect to the guys who came before him, it's just he is the best Marquette player ever in the NBA. There's no doubt about that. He is certainly on the short list of all-time Miami sports icons. Now, I'm not totally up to date with my Miami sports icons, but off the top of my head, Dan Marino, Dan Shula, Dwayne Wade may enter the conversation there, honestly. He definitely, I mean, he won three titles. It's, you know, Marino, as great as he was, he never got that ring. Now Shula won some championships, of course. But, and, you know, beyond that, like, I don't think any Miami
Marlins
player.
Are we talking Larry Zonka?
I mean, all their good players, they trade them away before they can build much of a legacy in Miami. Maybe they win them a title, but then they trade them all away. Maybe the Miami Hurricanes, some guys like, you know, Jimmy Johnson or, you know, Warren Sapp, Michael Irvin, certainly have some legacy and some historical significance in Miami. But as far as longevity, none of them have what Wade had, like three rings.
The championships is what matters, right? I mean, the fact that he brought – I mean, Miami had never won any kind of championship prior to Wade, right?
Yeah. The Miami Heat had not, yes.
Well, had the Dolphins?
72 Dolphins.
Oh, yeah, you're right. The 72 Dolphins.
And, you know, the Marlins have won two World Series, which is easy to forget.
That's right.
You know, the Marlins won in 03 and 97. 96. Yeah, 97.
97.
So the Miami Heat had not won. But, yeah, Wade brought the city three championships. And really, him winning that first championship was what enticed LeBron to come and help win them two more.
Right.
So he really kind of got the whole Miami Heat big three going. And the other list that you could put Wade near the top of is all-time Chicago high school basketball products. You know, guys who played their prep ball in Chicago. So there's certainly a legacy there of a lot of very good players who played in college and in the NBA who played their prep ball in Chicago. You know, some others, historically, George Mikan is an all-timer, Isaiah Thomas, Derrick Rose. Some people include Kevin Garnett in that. He played 1 year in Chicago. He's from South Carolina, but you can include Kevin Garnett in that. Anthony Davis is certainly looking like he's going to be an all-timer as far as guys who played high school ball in Chicago. But, you know, Wade from the greater Chicago area, he's on that list of all-time greats from the city of Chicago who played their prep ball in that area. So those four lists, top three shooting guard all time, Marquette's best pro player ever, all-time Miami sports icons, he's got to be on the – if someone out there is a Miami sports aficionado, tell me where Dwayne Wade ranks for you in the history of Miami sports. I'd be curious to hear from someone who's up to date on their Miami sports. I would, you know, is he top five? Is he ahead of Marino? I'd be curious to know.
He's got to be ahead.
And then all-time Chicago high school basketball product. So all those lists, Wade is at or near the top of them.
Well, right. And just think about, like, if people went back and revisited the 2003 draft, right? He turned out better, certainly better than Carmelo. And let's not even get started on Darko, right? I mean, the only player that he doesn't go ahead of in that draft is LeBron.
Right. Who is on his way to making the case of number one all time. I mean, some people already have him there, and like I've resisted that for a long time, but if you want to call LeBron the number one all time, I'm not going to fight you now. I mean, he's right there. But you look at that draft class, it looked good at the time, but they all look good on draft night, right?
Right.
Like they all, you know, on draft night, we're all saying, oh, look at this class. What a great class. And in the end, like three or four guys in any given draft class are like really good. And then the rest, some just hang around the league a while, and the rest are busts. But, you know, that 03 draft class was really outstanding. Like you said, it was obviously LeBron at the top. He was the guy. Darko was the bust. Then you had Carmelo at three, and, you know, while I would put Wade ahead of him, certainly Carmelo's had a great career. Chris Bosh had a great career. David West has had a long, very good NBA career, not like Hall of Fame, but very good. Kirk Heinrich and Nick Collison have had long careers. Heinrich's retired now, but Collison is still playing. There are a few other guys who were in that 03 draft who are still hanging around, forgetting somebody off the top of my head. But yeah, in that class, as good as it's been, you know, they mentioned that 03 draft class among the best all time, right up there with Jordan's class. And I'm trying to think some of the others that are way up there, but yet like
Bird Johnson.
Up there as well. But so yeah, and in that 03 draft class, yeah, you would probably say he's probably I'd say definitely that he's the second best player to come out of that outstanding 03 draft class, right behind arguably the greatest of all time, LeBron James.
Right. Yeah. So, I guess you wonder how much credit you give Wade, but like you did mention, I mean, Wade brought the big three together. You know, I'm sure some of it, you know, some of it goes to Pat Riley and Eric Spoelstra, and, you know, but Wade kind of fostered the relationship with LeBron and Chris Bosh, who were, you know, draft mates or whatever, and brought that together. So
like Wade kind of seemed like he was the architect of the whole thing. And it kind of started, I think, when they played in USA Basketball. I guess that would have been what, 04? Maybe,
04 or was it 08?
Because he won the title in 06. So maybe that summer in 06, you know, when they were playing like FIBA World Championships and then 08. Yeah, they probably played Olympics in 08. Yeah, he's like really built that relationship. And LeBron could have gone literally anywhere when he became a free agent for the first time. And he's like, you know what? If I'm going to win a title, I'm going to pair up with Dwayne Wade. So that's what we're going to do. And so so what he's done off the court to kind of build Miami into, you know, a great NBA franchise, certainly is just as good as some of the things he's done on the court. And I'll certainly never forget the 06 finals. It's funny because I live in Dallas. That is a very sore subject in these parts.
Yeah, I could imagine.
You know, because obviously Dwayne Wade went to the line a lot in that game. And people say, man, that thing was fixed. Just got a bunch of garbage calls. I'm like, well, maybe you should have stopped him. Sorry. Maybe you should have had somebody preventing him from getting to the basket. And plus, you could have closed it out and gone up 3-1, and then you choked in game four. So, yeah, I'm not going to cry for you.
not even a little bit.
Yeah. That 06 finals, granted, we're looking at it through Marquette glasses, and I know a lot of people hated the 06 finals because they thought Wade got too many calls, and maybe he did get a few too many, but I don't care. It was an amazing performance, and like watching that after seeing what he did 3 years earlier, getting Marquette to a Final Four, it's just like, man, this dude who, like, I barely knew his name at Marquette Madness a few years earlier, is turned into one of the biggest stars in basketball history, and it's just amazing that his career is just about over. Maybe it is over. Maybe it's a year or two left. But it has been one hell of a ride from Dwayne Wade. And if this is it, we salute you. Hell of a ride for Wade.
Absolutely. But please don't retire just yet. Give me another year.
Yeah, please do a farewell tour. And, you know, hopefully that works out for the Miami Heat and he'd be up for, you know, kind of being the super sub off the bench, leading the second unit off the bench. And, you know, if he's up for that and up for a farewell tour, maybe he'll do that. But who knows? Maybe he doesn't want a farewell tour. Maybe he doesn't want to play for a team when, you know, that probably isn't going to win a title. But who knows? Hey, who knows? Maybe LeBron shocks us all and goes back to Miami.
that would get interesting real quick.
Yeah, the thing is, LeBron could go to literally any team and like, oh, they could win the title now.
Yeah. Well, but I mean, I don't. I think that when they ran it back, trying to do a pseudo big three with Wade in Cleveland, we saw how that all turned out. Somehow,
that's true.
Wade ate his way through Cleveland, and Jay Crowder turned into a jerk. I don't see them getting the band back together for that. But
I don't either. But who knows? Stranger things have happened.
Exactly.
We'll see how it goes. So, I guess that's enough NBA talk on our Marquette basketball podcast. But we'll see if Wade announces what his future holds. But yeah, I guess that's it for now. The only other thing I would touch on, but I don't think there's any news of it, is the TBT. I don't see any news of Golden Eagles.
I've seen
alumni
nothing.
Coming back.
Yeah. It's been quiet. They're starting to get some teams pulled together, but yeah, I haven't seen anything from Marquette.
Yeah, I guess just keep an eye on that on Twitter, if because they could pop up any day now. Then you just need all the Marquette fans to hop in and vote, and then you get the team into the tournament.
Yeah, I would follow, you know, Dan Fitzgerald, because he's the one that the last couple of years has been the kind of the driver of it. So hopefully he'll jump up and start doing it.
Yeah, we'll see if TBT happens again. If not, yeah, it'd be a bummer because I do enjoy watching that thing when the Marquette guys are in it. But I guess getting that team together is a lot easier said than done, especially as guys are trying to figure out their next moves as far as pro contracts go. And, you know, you're not getting Dwight Bikes back because now that he's got a pro contract, and I don't know if you're going to get Vanderblue to play. And you may not get Jamil Wilson to play, but yeah, Marquette has enough alumni out there who, if they wanted to form a team and get one together, they certainly could. But
how crazy again, would be if Wade retires and then just to lead the team to the TBT championship?
Now that would be a farewell tour. Like Wade retires and say, but for my Marquette farewell, I'm going to lead Golden Eagles alumni in the TBT. We're going to win $2 million.
They would automatically be the favorites, right?
You would hope. Even though he's past his prime, having an NBA Hall of Famer on your team freaking changes everything.
I changed my request. I no longer want the farewell NBA tour. I want the TBT Wade team.
Yeah, the Wade-led TBT. Yes, make that happen. That'd be pretty sweet. Actually, no, seriously, do a farewell tour in the NBA. That's what we all want. But I guess that's going to do it for this edition of Scrambled Eggs. As always, everyone, we appreciate you checking in with us here in the offseason and keeping up with Marquette basketball. It's mostly quiet between April and October, but things will get cranked up again soon enough. We're not sure when we'll do another podcast, but as news warrants, we may pop up in your podcast feeds at some point in June or July or never. We'll see. As always, you can hit us up on Twitter. I'm Joe McCann 3. Phil is MOOOF23. You can hit up Crack Sidewalks as the team handle. You can leave your comments on cracksidewalks.com where we post the podcasts. You can also rate us and review us, and be sure to subscribe on Apple Podcasts. We appreciate your feedback there. And we have a Facebook page as well for Scrambled Eggs. We post the podcast on the Facebooks if that's your thing. Phil, any final thoughts before we get out of here?
I will catch up on Marvel's Cinematic Universe, and we can have a pod about it probably the next time.
Phil hasn't even seen Black Panther yet, you guys.
Stop it, Joe! Don't tell people!
He's got some work to do, but hey, that's coming out on digital soon, so you can watch that at home, and then hopefully next time around we can talk Infinity War. Who knows, maybe next time we pod we'll talk about Ant-Man and the Wasp.
There are so many at-me's that are going to come flying my way. Thanks,
I know.
Joe. You're the worst.
Like I would mute your Twitter feed after you post the podcast because people are just going to try to spoil it for you.
Awesome.
Until next time, seashells and balloons, everybody. Go see Infinity War.